Welcome, everyone, to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and as usual, I'm joined with Seth Weintraub. How are you, Seth?
I'm good, Fred.
Awesome. So Seth just came back from a week at CES, and as usual, in the last few years, there's been a few EV stuff at CES that are unveiled or debuted for the U.S. market, at least. So we're going to get into that. But as usual, we're going to start with Tesla like we do every week. A few interesting news about Tesla. I think the main one is the fact that Elon Musk announced that Tesla is discontinuing the 75 kilowatt hour battery pack for the Model S and X, which has a big implication, I think, on those two vehicle programs. Even, well, it has a big implication, especially if there's something else that comes with it, because I don't think that they're just going to discontinue the 75 kilowatt hour battery pack and just leave the 100 kilowatt hour battery pack option as the only option for the for the Model S and X.
It's very suspicious. Just having one option for the Model X and S. There's been a lot of speculation that there's new battery packs coming, maybe something more like the Model 3 or something. We don't know. We've heard some things, but nothing to write about yet.
Yeah, we're going to probably have more on that by the time that it's actually discontinued, because that's coming on Monday. You can still order the 75 kilowatt hour battery pack option for both Model X and X right now until Sunday night, according to Elon Musk. And yeah, I mean, if there's nothing else coming up, it's a huge change, because the Model S is going from $76,000 to $94,000, unless they decide to cut the price of the 100 kilowatt hour battery pack at that point. Which would be weird if it's just that. If there's something else going on,
Just lowered it $2,000. So
yeah, also, so that's that for the Model X. It would be going from $82,000 to $97,000 for the 100 kilowatt hour pack option. For sure, if they do that, they don't replace the 75 with anything. What it helps the Model 3, because it widens the gap between the top range option for Model 3 and the lower range option for the Model S, and just the Model S, basically the X. I don't think the X has a big impact on the Model 3 market. But yeah, I mean, the big speculation right now, and I hope we're going to be able to confirm relatively soon, is that Tesla is going to bring the Model 3 battery pack architecture to the Model S and X with the 2070 battery cells, which is going to enable the Model S and X to take better advantage of the supercharger V3 that's coming soon. So that would be a big deal, higher charge rate. And would also enable different battery option for Model S and X. So maybe the 100 kilowatt hour pack stays, but it stays as a 2070 cell architecture pack. And Tesla announced something else, maybe smaller, maybe bigger. I'm not so sure. But also, with that announcement, Elon said that Tesla is going to be moving away from actually marketing their pack as based on the kilowatt hour battery capacity of each pack. They're going to go with something like they did with the Model 3, which we know now, like the standard battery pack, mid-range battery pack, long-range battery pack, which they think is easier for like the broader market. I mean, I'm fine with that, but I think they should still release the energy capacity of those packs, even if it's not what they use to advertise, right? I mean, if I'm buying a car, I want to know the energy capacity of that car, right? Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, but we're not typical people. I agree with you. Like, I definitely want to know the size of the battery pack of the car I'm buying. And I've said this before. I wonder if Tesla's planning to, when they have some more efficiencies, if they can drop the amount of batteries in the pack down a little bit. So, for instance, if Tesla had a more efficient upgrade to the Model 3, it still goes 310 miles, but it only has a 70 kilowatt hour battery pack. They could, you know, kind of seamlessly lower the size of the pack. It would still have the same range. I don't know.
The lighter. Yeah, well, yeah. I think the 2070 cells could certainly result in efficiency gain for the Model S and X, though. Not for Model 3, the impact, but there's plenty of opportunity doing that. It's just that it's a really big deal to change the battery architecture of a vehicle program like that.
Yeah, I mean, and what you're talking about, like if it's got the faster charging abilities, that's not just the battery pack. That's like the wiring and the you know, all the way to the charger port and, you know, the battery management system and everything. Yeah, it's a good question. I guess if Tesla is going to announce a supercharger V3, they don't want to have their high-end cars not be able to take advantage of it.
That makes sense, yeah.
So I think this has to come first, the battery pack update. Then I guess then the announcement of the supercharger. I just wonder if this is going to be the big update where we've seen the inside, you know, where it looks a lot more like a Model 3. I wonder if that's coming as well.
Or if Yeah, when I got that information last year, it was pretty far out. It's going to be Q3 and early Q3, like July maybe. I don't think the performance upgrade needs to be necessarily linked to the design upgrade. Like they probably want actually to stretch like the demand for the Model S and X. So a performance upgrade early in the year would result in a demand increase. And the thing with the design change for the Model S and X is that it's not necessarily one that's appreciated by everyone. Like, not everyone liked the Model 3 interior, so maybe they would prefer something closer to what Tesla has right now than what's coming. I think a lot of people like don't understand the design upgrade for the interior. Like, because if you look at the pictures without going into detail, it looks like it doesn't have an instrument cluster, and that was an issue for many people in the Model 3. But it does have an instrument cluster. The redesign that we were talking about, just it's different. But that's what we talked about last week or the week before that. When we talk about what to expect for Tesla in 2019, we said the Model S and X gonna have a big year. This year is gonna be upgraded a lot, and I think we're gonna see that sooner than we expected. With maybe as soon as next week.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have something to add or move on?
Well, I was just thinking, if they're cutting off the 75 next week, they're going to probably, you know, they would have cut off the 100 too. So it may not be super quick. They might go a couple of weeks without any kind of upgrade.
Yeah, my speculation in regards to that was that maybe they're going to use like a production line that focuses on 75 kilowatt per pack. They're going to upgrade that to the 2017 while they keep the 100 kilowatt hour line going to be able to still sell a few Model S and X. And then when that's done, they can switch all the lines and everything.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's just speculation again. Moving on, we're going to talk a little bit about the autopilot. So Elon Musk this week announced that there's the new update is coming. The one, especially about the summon features that were promised under the enhanced autopilot program. So it was the one that he announced last year with like the pet mode or whatever, like the fact that the car would follow you based on the key or your phone throughout the parking lot. I'm not sure how useful that is, but it's something that Tesla wants to do amongst other things with the overall like summon sub-brand of feature within the autopilot.
But yeah, I mean, it would be cool if you could like set a path. Like you could say, "All right, when I summon it, I want it to come out of my garage and pull up in front of the front door."
It also would be cool. You want like to you can train like follow me there, then remember that route and do it again. Oh yeah, that's I haven't thought of that, but that makes sense.
That would be really beneficial.
Though that's not what he said though. Like though you should take note maybe. Yeah, so he said that's going through final validation and regulatory approval, and now they look at the release to the Early Access Program within a few weeks. And as we know, once it gets the Early Access Program, doesn't mean that it's coming too soon. Normally, it goes through that program for at least a week or two, sometimes longer, depending on what kind of feedback they get from the features from those early access owners. So we're going to look into that. And technically, at least at some point next month, we should see that feature if it sticks to the regular schedule. When Elon said that, I also asked him about the remote control mode, which previously, when he first announced it, was linked to that feature. So I thought, is it still in part of that update? What he said is, like, as part of the Summon feature, you would be able to control your car remotely, like a RC car, basically. But he did say that there's some regulatory pushbacks regarding that feature.
And
he says that it may not be available in all regions. So I know he didn't go too specific into like what regions, but we already have problem with Summon in some market. In Canada, for example, like the Model 3 update, when Model 3 got Summon, I started testing. I'm like, what's going on? It's not actually working. But apparently, for the Canadian market, there's some regulatory restriction that forces you to be about like right next to your car, maybe like 3 feet or something, which basically renders the features useless. Not really. I mean, unless like you have like a very tight garage and you cannot open the door at all, you can technically get out of the car before entering the garage, then like walk up like right next to your to the hood of the car and just reverse it back into the garage or something.
Actually, so, we kind of do that sometimes.
Yeah. You have a pretty tight garage, yeah, with your Model X too. So it's a bigger car.
Right.
Yeah, but yours, you can do it from farther away in the U.S., right?
Yeah, I can actually do it from my bedroom.
Yeah, so that's actually useful. Like, we've seen the guy a few months back was doing it from his office window to move his car from one parking spot to the next on the street in order not to get a ticket. So that's
right.
Great. But I don't know what kind of regulatory restrictions there are in Canada. That maybe it's just that they have a more strict testing process. But the feature exists in the U.S., so they have it. And they just handicap the feature in Canada for some reason that we don't know exactly. So that might still be the case for the remote control, which is even
more. So how do you think the remote control is going to work? Is that going to be over Wi-Fi, or is that going to be like through the internet?
Through the internet seems to be over Wi-Fi, right?
Or Bluetooth? I don't know.
Bluetooth, and yeah, maybe. I'm like, I don't know, like, what kind of you have to have a pretty strong network, right? You're sending a ton of information to the car on how to move, like all the inputs, and the car is sending back information it has to. Like, we haven't seen the UI yet, but it has to have a pretty significant UI that's not just like the front-facing camera, right? It has to be. More like something when you're parking in the car with autopilot, where you get the bird's eye view and you get all the what's close to your car. You need to have that plus like a front facing or back facing camera or something. So that's a lot of information to send
back
to your
phone. I'm just wondering if it's going to be like a DJI, like a drone.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But like you need more than just a DJI, because the DJI operates in a three-dimensional space, so it's like it's easier to move. Like you're on the ground, there's obstacles everywhere with a car. So especially with that, I assume it's going to be used only in private parking situation.
It would be cool to have like races though. Like if you could have like a little race around your yard with like two Teslas or something. That might be fun.
But that's what I just thought about that. Though he said it's regulatory pushbacks, but are they trying to use that on public roads? I mean, for sure that's only for a parking situation.
I really hope they're not going to use those on public roads.
And if it's just private parking situation, why would they need the regulatory approval?
Anything over the regular summon doesn't seem like they should need anything.
Yeah. I don't know, but so that would be a little later, I assume, after the pet mode. Is it that really what we're going to call it? Pet mode? Speaking of Autopilot, Tesla also released its safety report for the last quarter earlier this week. And that's something that Tesla started the quarter before that, the third quarter 2018. And now they are making it a regular thing, and they even started like a little micro website where you can get all the previous reports on it and track the changes, which is really interesting. So real quick, for the last quarter, Tesla registered one accident per 3.34 million miles driven with autopilot engaged. That compares to one accident per 1.92 million miles when a Tesla was driven without autopilot engaged. So while Tesla doesn't say that, and they can't, and we can't really either, well, because the data would say like that the autopilot is safer than when a Tesla is driven by a human, but we know that the mileage that's done with the autopilot is done on the highway versus when you're driving the Tesla, you're driving it on the road.
Right.
But I also have to assume that that's for the entire fleet. So if it's an entire fleet, the human-driven mileage also include the mileage with the car that don't have autopilot. So if you don't have autopilot, then those people don't use it on the highway. They drive on the highway. So there's also plenty of highway mileage in that 1.92 million miles. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not 1.2 million miles. One accident per 1.2 million miles. But, so basically, comparing the two numbers are not ideal. It's better to track progress over time. And if you do that, we can only go back right now to the third quarter. And it's a decline in safety from through Q3 to Q4, which was 2.9 million miles. I just got that wrong, right? Oh, yeah, sorry, I got that wrong. So forget what I just said. What I gave you, the 3.3 million miles, that was for Q3 and 1.2 million miles too. In Q4, that was 2.9 million miles, one accident per 2.9 million miles with autopilot, 1.5 million miles for miles driven without autopilot. So again, that's a decrease from Q3 to Q4. That can be explained though for driving condition being tougher in Q4. There's less sunlight in Q4, so they'll also increase accidents. And in some markets too. Yeah, some markets you start to have snow, which also leads to more accidents with or without autopilot. So you can see that the discrepancy between the two though are still good, but the overall accidents increase. And Tesla likes to compare that number with the NHTSA number, which is for overall one accident per 436,000 miles. So Tesla is still like much better than the average car, but the average car also includes like much older vehicles, cheaper vehicles. So it's not a perfect way to compare things for sure, but it's still an interesting way to look at the data here. And
also if you think, you know, if you look at the news, you always see like Tesla accident, Tesla accident, Tesla caught on fire. It's actually way less. There's way fewer Tesla accidents than average car.
Yeah, but though you have to look, there has to be a ton of Tesla accident too. Not every Tesla accident has been reported, because if you look at that, one accident per 1.5 million miles driven by humans, 2.9 by autopilot. And like Tesla is was it 50 million miles per day or something like that? I don't remember exactly, but the number of miles of that entire fleet is pretty big. So it has to be like dozens, like a dozen Tesla accidents per day, basically on average. So it's not like everyone is reporting on every Tesla accident, but every time that you can see that the autopilot might have something to do with it, of course the media all grabs it. Yep. And if there's a fire, of course, That's also in there. And Tesla has been sued this week for the accident that happened last year, where tragically two kids died in that car. Now they're being sued. The family thinks that of one of the kids that it's due to a defective battery pack.
Yeah, but, I mean, they hit the wall going 116. I don't know what kind of battery pack or car would kind of save anybody in that situation. Yeah,
for sure. Like 116 miles per hour, you hit a concrete wall.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that in a Sherman tank and you'd probably still be have some.
you can go up to 116 miles Sherman tank, but we get your point. Yeah, so that's sad. I mean, like, I'm not blaming the parent for, and it's the parents of the passenger, not the kid that was driving crazy though.
Right.
That are suing now, and so that's part of the lawsuit. The other part though, it's weirder. They say that because the kid was 18 years old, was driving a Model S. I don't remember which one, but like all of Tesla vehicles are pretty fast, and in the hands of an 18-year-old might not be the greatest idea. But the parents said that they installed a speed limiter at the Tesla service center 2 months prior to the accident, and then the kid had it removed at another Tesla service center, apparently allegedly without the parents knowing. So that's stranger. And the parents of the passengers say that Tesla was like... wasn't careful in doing that. But then what happened after the accident, Tesla released their own speed limiting feature that's done through software. So if you just don't give access to the it's password protected basically system. So if you don't give your car to your kid but you don't give the password, then you can limit the speed. Because that was the tragic part about that accident, is that the father said that he admitted that like giving a Tesla to a kid is kind of weird, like, but he said that the reason why he did it is because they were thought to be so much safer than other cars, like with the 5-star safety rating and everything. So that's why he gave it, and then the kids die in it. But of course he died in it because of excessive speed. But Tesla dedicated that software feature to the Riley, I think is the name of the child. So that's pretty nice of them. And it's going to help other people too. All right,
yeah,
moving on.
It's also kind of a reminder, like, don't let your kids go 116 miles per hour.
For sure. Like I get the idea behind it, that the Model S is certainly a safe car. So if you want to get your kid in something safe, that makes sense if you have the money for it too. Like, yeah. But it's still a crazy powerful car, and an 18-year-old do stupid shit all the time. So.
So did Elon say anything interesting this week on Twitter? Maybe the Roadster having the ability to hover.
Oh, okay. You're skipping ahead. You're jumping over one. Sure. He did say something pretty crazy. Someone posted that's like a DeLorean Back to the Future car, basically, right? Looks like it. Which is sort of hovering over the ground with two rocket thrusters underneath. And someone posted that and tagged Elon Musk in it. And Elon said that that's something... the new Roadster will actually do something like this. So he didn't say exactly this, but something like this. But if you look at the actual GIF itself, I mean, the car is literally flying. So anything that's something like this, it's like at least hovering over the ground, at least like lifting over the ground, lifting off the ground, I mean.
Yeah, I don't think the wheels are going to spin either. You know, like the wheels aren't going to flip over and be like the rocket thrusters.
Yeah, that's a major problem for safety too. Yeah, having a lot of failure points there. But so we already know about this SpaceX package that Elon has been promising for the new next-gen Roadster. And that's going to include... cold air thruster all around the car, I think 10 or 12 or something. And
so I don't get that. Why would they just not put them in the back? Why would they put them underneath? Like, is it going to lift up the car? Like, that doesn't seem like it would be intuitive.
Yeah, well, he's been talking about all around the car, so it doesn't just help with the acceleration.
Oh, but also steering and stuff.
Yeah, so cornering, you could literally like turn with propulsion, like propulsion turning instead of just steering.
Right, so, and theoretically also if you're like starting to slide or spin out or something, it could, you exactly. know, there's like some sort of autopilot on that.
Yeah, but I mean, if you can also direct the car, direct the air underneath the car to get it to lift, I mean, I don't know the weight of the Roadster, but it got a 200 kilowatt battery pack in there, so it's not going to be like one of those light car, like a sports roadster, like a Lotus or something. It's gonna be pretty heavy still, and you got a lot of pressure there to lift that car. And I mean, just the sound alone of that hair going out, it's gonna I don't think you can do that like on the street, on the public street or something.
No, it doesn't sound. It sound these all sound like very tracky type things. I mean, like I was having a discussion about this the other day. Like you're going to put a zero to quarter mile in 8 seconds. He's saying zero to 60 in under 2 seconds. You're going to put this in the hands of like idiots like you and me. Like we don't have any base training or anything. Like we're gonna hurt ourselves, obviously. Like I'm gonna speed limit my own car while I'm in it, just so I don't.
I think the idea of being the roadster, because it's gonna have the full autopilot suit too. So and it's gonna come out in 2020, and Elon Musk expects Tesla to have like a full self-driving system by 2020. So how I see the roadster, like it's a cool car to have around, like to do fun stuff with, but. For the main part on public roads, it's going to be self-driving, I think. Well, that's what they're aiming for. I mean, I'm also skeptical about the 2020 fully self-driving vehicle, but that's what Elon is thinking. And then you can actually take it to the track and have fun with the car. So it's going to be a track car, I think. It's going to be for the track. Though it's not like as pricey as what you would mainly expect from a vehicle that's mostly for the track. But again, it's also like just a design thing. Like it's a beautiful design, so it's a car that people are gonna want to like a status vehicle that people are gonna want. So I think there's gonna be different approach. But
how much do you think of an option? How much do you think the SpaceX option is gonna cost? It's gonna be like 100,000.
I wouldn't be surprised at something between like 50 to 100K. Yeah? That'll make sense. You also lose the back seat, which could be a big deal for many people. So, even with the SpaceX package,
no more family trips to Florida with the SpaceX package.
Yeah, you can. Well, even like a family trip, even though you have a back seat, I mean, then that's mean you're like four people in the car. Where you put your luggage with four people in the car, with though it apparently still has a trunk and a front, but
yeah, no idea.
I don't expect it to be quite very big. Much like the I just got the Jaguar, by the way. The Jaguar Hi-Pace is in the driveway right now to test drive. The first thing I did was opening the trunk and then just laugh at it and close it.
The frunk is like a glove box.
Yeah, it's so ridiculous, but. What I was going to say is that even with, let's say it's going to cost $100,000 on the new Roadster, it still just make the Roadster a $300,000 car, which for a car with that, those specs, like in that kind of price range, it's not that crazy of a price.
Not at all. I mean, there's $2 million cars. The Bugatti Veyron's $2 million.
That look at the specs and feel ashamed.
Right.
Yeah, so that's. I mean, I feel like we're gonna see a demo of that SpaceX package on the Roadster this year, right?
Maybe we'll see something at like the unveil of the Model Y and theoretically the pickup. I don't know.
Yeah,
I would want to see it. It seems like they've been playing with it for sure.
Yeah, it sounds like it. It sounds like something that they already have in the prototype for sure, based on Elon's comments on it over the last year. But I feel like it's something like they could just demo and release like as a publicity, like even though the Roadster is not ready for another year or so, just for publicity they could release it.
Would you like hypothetically, if you had access to two Roadsters, would you sell one Roadster to get the SpaceX package on the other Roadster?
Oh yeah, I think. If I really do get a Roadster like Tesla is promising through the referral program, I'm getting the SpaceX package. You have to, if you have a chance to get.
All right,
that's Roadster on your car. I mean,
I'll enjoy that
your back seat
vicariously through you, but I'm not gonna. I need the back seat for the kids.
Yeah,
we're taking the kids to Target. We need in the Roadster.
I'm a single guy. I don't have kids. Like,
right.
I'm going to indulge in the SpaceX package. I mean, the old things about those cars too. Like, they're not going to be unique. This is going to probably make quite a few of them. But there's the aspect of it's one upping each other and like, oh, who has the fastest car? Everything.
Right.
So I don't think many people buy those cars and don't buy like fully equipped at that kind of range. So. But I'm not buying that. Like, I would never spend any money on that. Like, it's not something that I could do even. But if Tesla is really like giving them out, if you refer enough. And I did refer a ton of sales. I mean, talking about millions of dollars in Tesla sale over the last year. So I think it's fair that we're being compensated for it. But even though it's crazy compensation if you're talking about a Roadster. Next gen. Yeah, exciting stuff. Real quick, we're going to mention for our European listeners that are reservation holders, your car are Model 3 reservation holders. Your cars are coming. They've been spotted last night in the San Francisco port. Looks like Tesla is building up a large shipment of Model 3 to ship out quite soon. The cargo ship was there, and there was over 1,000 Model 3s there. And not sure if they were starting with 1,000 or they might have still been accumulating cars there, so it might be a bigger shipment, because we've learned, of course, last month that the Zeebrugge port in Belgium is preparing to receive 3,000 Model 3s per week to handle those cars. So, and it takes 2 to 4 or 5 weeks to get between San Francisco and Belgium by boat. So. At some point in next month, the first people that got the car should get them. I think I've heard that also some people are getting their delivery dates in Europe right now. So, especially for the like multi performance and all-wheel drive with their only vehicle that you can order right now.
Makes sense. Sounds about right.
Yeah. Official breaking ground ceremony at Gigafactory 3. That happened on Earth this week. Elon Musk even went to Shanghai for it. Nothing much new from that, aside from Elon tweeting a few things about the timing of the construction. So he expects construction to happen very quickly. Well, they're starting now, but they think that the actual facility itself is going to be finished by the summer, which would be crazy. And production would start by the end of the year, but that's something that they already announced. But when we say production, it's really just they were saying some part of multi-production, but what is speculated is that's probably like some kind of final assembly thing so that they can get around the import tariffs. So they're going to do like the bare minimum that they can in order to get around those tariffs, and then from there ramp up and get more production out of it. It's not like they're trying to screw the government or anything. It's just that they want to produce cars from from sheet of metals to working vehicles there at Gigafactory 3. They need the manufacturing capacity they can have it there, but they also need to get around those tariffs as soon as possible, because right now there's some kind of reprieve for the first quarter, but after that we're not sure what's going to happen there. And of course, China is a huge market for Tesla and for any other automaker, really. So it's a big deal. And I think Tesla is going to focus on shipping as many cars they can in China in Q1, and then like see how it goes for the next 6 months or so. But just ramp things up like Gigafactory as soon as possible in order to get around the tariff. And either way, they want to get around the tariff, even things change, because they were at 25%. Now they are 25% for the first quarter, but they were going to go up at 45%. So and if they can get around, if you can get around 25%, that's already good. If it does go up at 45 after the first quarter, then you need it to go up to get around them, because like it's going to affect the demand like anything else. Because Tesla has some competition in China too. So by Chinese manufacturer that. I don't get that import tariff at all.
Yeah, I don't know if they have competition at their price point, but yeah, there's definitely There's the Nios and everything else.
Yeah, we always talk about when we talk about Chinese car, we never tried them. Like we want to go to China at some point and go try them out because we assume that there's some kind of quality difference. It's not like a direct competition Tesla, but if you're in China and I think you see them as competition, really, especially the Nio, like you said. All right, so Seth, you were at CES this week.
Yeah, so CES is always fun and also a little bit of hell, just because there's so much to see and there's so much to miss, I guess. And it's always like crazy crowded and traffic's a mess and food's horrible. So anyway, what's that?
Food's horrible. Food's always okay for me, I guess.
Oh yeah, so. Sorry, if I'm paying for it, the food's horrible. But if Nissan's paying for it, the food is amazing. And Nissan did bring us out for their launch of the Leaf 62 kilowatt hour called Plus or S Plus or E Plus, depending on where you're located. It's the same car everywhere. It just has a slightly different name for whatever reason. What's nice about it, besides the extended range, which is up to 226 miles, although the one I peeked at, and you can see in our article about it, the dash actually said like 283 miles, but the official range is 226 miles. That's an EPA estimate, so I'm sure the NEDC thing is going to be like 250 or something and whatever. But, it's roughly similar to Chevy Bolt or... a Kia Niro or whatever. The Niro or the Kona. So what's nice about this, initially they said that it was going to have 150 kilowatt motor, which would have put it down with again the Chevy Bolt and the Kia, but they changed the press release, and I don't know if that was because they had a typo originally or if there was different specs coming out of R&D, but it came out being a 215 horsepower or 160 kilowatt motor, which we don't have 0-60 times on it yet, but obviously that's going to be a lot speedier than the Leaf that we're used to. Mm-hmm. Theoretically, it could be faster than a Bolt, depending on how the weight effect. It's definitely a bigger car than the Bolt.
They didn't release any 0-60, right?
No, and they did kind of off the record tell me it was a little bit above 6 seconds, which is the same
above
as the
Bolt. 6 seconds?
Yeah.
Is it the Bolt is not 5?
I think. Hell yeah, maybe it is. I don't know.
I thought I have 5.5 in mind, but that's also the Model 3 base version. But I thought Model 3 base version was like very similar to the Bolt. In my head, but I might be mistaken.
So. I think the Model 3 base model has like a 280 horsepower engine versus the Bolt was 200. So I think the Bolt is still a little slower. We can look that up. Anyway, we don't even know. So that was just a guess. The other kind of nice thing, I guess, about this Nissan is that it's got a faster charging, although it's still CHAdeMO, which, CHAdeMO is kind of losing the battle of the charging standards.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice if there's like an adapter or something for CCS combo, but 70 kilowatt and up to 100 kilowatt peak, which is a weird way to
I thought it was interesting the way they put it, and I guess it's fair though. We're gonna have to see a full charging cycle, but might be a better way to talk about things, right? Like what charge rate you can maintain for a long period of time versus like, oh yeah, you can get to 100 kilowatts, but for 5 minutes, and then only if you are at like 20% charge rate, state of charge or something.
Yeah, maybe it's like 0-80%. What is the average charge rate? Then that's 70, and then 100 is like when you go to 10-20%. So also, they didn't give a price, which is a little frustrating. But they did give a price in Europe, which was, actually. I think there's a 39,000 euro one and a 45,000 euro limited edition euro one. So that's a little bit higher than I would have expected.
That's with VAT too, right?
Right. So I would guess probably around 40,000, 39,000. US. We had heard it was going to be 36,000, so anywhere in that
area. I think it could still be around that price with that, no?
Yeah, I think it could, but you know, euros are obviously more valuable than dollars, so. And you know, obviously the 100 kilowatt charging is only when you have a 100 kilowatt CHAdeMO charger, which I've never even seen before. So they said they're going to have some at the dealers, which is nice, I guess. You know, your local Nissan dealer may have 100 kilowatt. And their partners, which include EVgo, are going to upgrade their 50 kilowatt CHAdeMO connections to 70 and 100 kilowatts. So that'll be beneficial. And if you have a fast charger, the new Leaf will charge at the same 0% to 80% speed. So it wasn't super fast before on the 40 kilowatt hour one. It won't be super fast now, but you'll get more range in that time period. So a lot of good things. I mean, the Leaf isn't like the state of the art, super fast charging car, but it's, you know, it's the original kind of like low cost EV. And I know a big concern with our readers and the EV community in general is about the passive battery cooling and heating versus active liquid going around. And this one, yet again, is passive. And
that's insane, know, right?
That to me was like, they're just not like hearing people. Because, you know, that, like, if you want to buy a older Leaf, like a 2012 Leaf or something, they're super cheap because the range on the battery packs has gone from, you know, 80 or whatever it started with to like 40. And, you know, basically you can only take it to the train and back or pick up your kids at school or something. So that was because of the, you know, the batteries overheated when they were charged too much and are not enough. So Nissan actually put me in front of some battery folks there, and you know, I'm a little bit skeptical of how accurate their information is, because they initially told me it was LG batteries versus their in-house AESC cells, which is really weird. Two different people told me that they were using LG cells, and then later on I saw another report. So I went back to them and I said, hey, both of your battery people told me you guys were using LG cells. And they're like, no, they were wrong. So something
and
weird.
Prior to that announcement, that was the biggest thing about the battery upgrade, that the fact that it's going to have active cooling and have new LG cells, which also made sense with the announcement that Nissan was actually selling their battery division to I think Chinese conglomerate that bought it.
So something weird happened, or there's going to be another announcement, or you know, maybe in the European market they're going to use LG, in the US market they're going to use any whatever.
Whatever the name.
Yeah, that's just doesn't roll off the tongue. It's what is it? AESC.
Yeah.
What a horrible name. Anyway,
it stands for something.
Stands for something.
Don't remember. I think I wrote about it in my report when they actually sold it, but
I don't know if they've actually gotten rid of it totally. It sounds like it's still part of them.
They had trouble doing it, like a few times they reached an agreement, but then it fell through. But I think the last time was the right one. I think the last time they actually did it.
Maybe part of the sale was like, we're going to buy batteries for you for some period of time. So that's why they have to say that they're doing it. Anyway, what else? So the cooling thing's an issue. The battery is an issue. But, you know, Nissan's got almost a decade of EV experience. The car looks a lot better. It's better in every way than the previous version, which, you know, that's good. One thing I do like about Nissan is they're actually working on vehicle to the grid and vehicle to home. You know, actively doing that. So, you know, when you buy a Nissan Leaf, you know that capability is likely coming up in a year or so. I don't know. It's better to have this on the market than not to have this on the market.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
a lot of people love these things. I think there's a big market for them. Yeah.
Well, it all depends on the price, right? I mean, like you said, we don't have a confirmed price in the U.S., right? But if it comes in at like 36 or something, it's going to be competitive, I think.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, the dealer network is out there. Nissan dealers have been selling Leafs for almost a decade, so they're at least a little bit up to date on them. Yeah, I don't know. It's just always hard, you know, we're covering like state of the art, you know, prototypes and stuff, that when Nissan's product doesn't quite meet all the specs that you had originally had in your head, it's I guess a little bit of a letdown. But in addition to that, Nissan, and this is part of the Best of CES post I did, the IMX concept, they had that like literally sitting right next to the Leaf, and talk about a bad way to launch a product is have something really cool right next to it that you can't have. But the IMX we've seen before. It was the first time at CES, though. It's basically like a suicide door. It looks a little bit like the Byton with the wraparound screen inside. It's supposed to be fully autonomous. It's got, you know, nice big crossover type wheels. And what's kind of cool is they're actually going to build it. I don't know how much of it they're going to keep. With, you know, the screens don't seem like something that will be here at the end of the year, but. And even better news, it's not just one product. It's going to be like four or five different vehicles, and they're going to come like rapid fire over the next 2 or 3 years. So, you know, you're going to have a kind of sporty crossover kind of Nissan either at the end of this year or next year. And there's probably going to be an SUV version and maybe a sedan version and who knows what else.
And of course, what people always say is like it's always they're always saying 2 or 3 years away or something like that.
Yeah.
But those are real vehicle programs where they're spending millions on them right now. So it's actually coming in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and all the people I talked to, kind of off the record, were saying like this is what we're really excited about. The Leaf is kind of like last, you know, it's like a platform of the it's like the initial EV platform, and the IMX is like, you know, the modern EV platform,
the next gen one.
Yeah, so yeah, I mean, it's so I would love to drive the Leaf,
yeah, see what the new power is,
yeah,
it's really make a difference, right?
Yeah, it should definitely be a lot zippier. So, and I'll transition that to CES, where kind of the two big highlights were Harley Davidson's Livewire, which is, you know, a full like full size motorcycle, and they actually showed us two other prototypes that aren't necessarily going to be products but are super cool. One is kind of like a Super 73 type of vehicle with like a skateboard footrest and you know, goes 30 miles per hour. So good for cities, looked really cool. And then they had a off-road bike that kind of looks like a Suron or a you know, one of those Li Chinese bikes, but was made by Harley. It was like 4 kilowatt or something. So it's what's, you know, this is obviously a big deal for Harley. Harley's the big, you know, gasoline belching engines, loud, annoying. Whatever, and this is just a totally different side of them, hitting a different customer base. They want to hit the millennials, the urban dwellers, and you know, by all accounts, this is a really nice vehicle. They actually let me sit on one and spin the wheels on a dyno, and it was like pretty eerie how fast you would go from zero to like 68 or whatever. You just flick it and. All of a sudden, the wheel was going 68. So it's going to have plenty of power. They won't give us really too many specs on that. It is going to be on sale in autumn, and it's going to be $30,000, which sounds a little high to me, especially when we've been, you know, looking at all these other ones. But you know, a similar zero is going to be around the same price, so it's not outrageous. What's kind of nice about this one, though, is it's got DC fast charging, which means you can charge up.
You can get a zero up to $30,000. They start at like 12 or something.
Yeah, but I think that the decked out one is like 26 or 28 or something.
Maybe. I think you get 110 miles out of the Harley.
Yeah, the Harley has 110, but that's you know, urban miles or city miles, so it may be a little bit less on the highway. But you do have the DC fast charger, which will get you back to full charge pretty quick. The downside, I guess, sort of, is that the J1772 part of the CCS combo only charges at level one. It doesn't charge at level two because having the inverter on board would be a big endeavor. So they have a smaller inverter. So if you go to like a charge point, you know, level two station, you're not going to get a fast charge out of this. You can still charge, but it's just not fast at all.
Okay.
And
it looks awesome. The design is insane.
Yeah, the design is really nice. They had a kind of like a shock yellow green version. We've also seen an orange version. I think they're gonna have an all black version. Was kind of talked about a little bit. So good for them. Like we were kind of worried that they weren't gonna really come out with this thing, but they actually are. And I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, it's years in the making, right?
Yeah, we've been talking about this since you've been writing here, I think.
No, even before that.
Yeah.
I think it's 2013, I think, the first prototype that came out.
Yeah, it was just part of the Marvel
thing. I want to ask you, because you talked briefly about the Sauron-like prototype that they unveiled. You posted a picture in the room and the electric room at some point with a Sauron and the Segway. You didn't follow up on it. What was that about?
Okay, so at the Segway Ninebot booth, they had a couple Surons, and they had Segway markings all over it. So I asked the guy there, who was not a native English speaker, and I was like, hey, are you guys going to start selling these? What's going on? And he's like, oh, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. I'm like, well, you know, why is it here? And he's like, well, we have nothing to announce. Nothing. And I was like, well, can I talk to somebody who can tell me why these are here? And he's like, well, maybe we're discussing with them. So I think probably that they were going to have an announcement, and it didn't. I think maybe didn't pan out, or maybe
don't put the bike on the floor. Then I mean, it's clearly a Sauron, and it's clearly marketed with Segway stuff on it.
Yeah. So which sucks, because that would be fantastic if all the places you could buy Segway, you could buy a Sauron. I'm also thinking maybe Luna kind of jumped in and said, hey, we're the U.S. distributor. You can't say anything or do anything.
That's which, you know. Too, because they've been the exclusive distributor of the thing. But
right.
I mean, if Segway can get involved, I mean, normally they are bigger in terms of volumes and stuff. And Sauron is an awesome bike.
Yeah. It would be nice to see that out in front of more people. Maybe they could even get the price down a little bit.
Yeah.
So speaking of kind of Segway-ish things, we also liked Swag. Micah posted the Swagtron press release, which was just like kind of it ran the gamut of like, you know, useful things like a beach cruiser to like vehicles we've never seen before, like a tricycle with two wheels in the front, electric. Not even a bike because it doesn't have pedals, but it has like a stand, and I believe it's foldable. But you know what we thought this was like one of the coolest lineups. But if we had to pick one like important vehicle, it would be the Swag Cycle 2, which is an upgrade from the Swag Cycle 1, which didn't have pedals. This one has pedals. It has shocks. It has lighting for night driving. It's just a very good low cost foldable bike. I have basically the predecessor called the EB1, and I, you know, we're in the middle of winter here, and I still almost every morning take my kid to the bus stop on it just so I can get back faster. And it's, you know, it works. It's you could go like 15-20 miles per hour. It feels pretty steady. If it's dark in the morning, it's got lighting, so And you know they're selling the EB1 for I think around $450 or something, $450, which for an e-bike is kind of crazy. I mean, that's kind of like what they're selling. You know, the high-end scooters that Lime and Bird are using. So to have a seat and some pedals.
Yeah,
it's a nice addition.
Did they talk about the release of those? Because those are all concept thing, right?
Those were definitely going to be released. I think most of this stuff is spring. Also on the site, you'll see that there's like a sit-down scooter. There's a off-road skateboard. And what's crazy about this off-road skateboard is it's 2 kilowatts. I don't know what you do with 2 kilowatts on a skateboard, but...
Well, if you go off-road, the efficiency is going to be a lot tougher.
That's true,
The condition is going to be a lot tougher on efficiency, so you probably going to make a big range out of it. Just look at those tires. I mean,
yeah, I know. These are very absurd vehicles, all of them. But, yeah, so a couple things we like about Swagtron is, you know, they're based in the U.S. They assemble some stuff in the U.S., so they're not just pulling over Chinese OEM stuff, although a lot of it is Chinese OEM. And they're actually going out to brick-and-mortar stores like Target or I think they were actually selling at Macy's. So they're going out. They're putting these things in front of people. People can sit on them and try them. So that's a benefit, and I think that's kind of why we thought these were the best of CES. And you know, what else did we see there? We saw an Audi e-tron e-foil, which was a surfboard with a hydrofoil motor on it. 18 miles of range, only weighs 18 kilograms. The power is 6 kilowatts, which is kind of fast. It goes about 27 miles per hour. Pretty interesting vehicle. You know, maybe some people can commute on it or something. I don't know.
Commute.
Anyway, next to Audi, Bell Helicopter, that, you know, they make a lot of civilian and military helicopters. Bell showed off what looked like kind of like a huge drone, but it basically a helicopter, and it was hybrid. Electric and diesel, and it's one of those VTOLs where you take off and then the propellers flip and then you like zoom forward. And it, you know, it was really cool to look at. Obviously they weren't flying it around CES. And then Schaeffler, we've seen this kind of crazy Audi that they converted with Formula E motors on YouTube. They've done like the perfect donuts. They've set a reverse speed record. They're doing all kinds of stuff with the computers on these motors just for fun. It's 880 kilowatts or 1200 horsepower. The engines are, you know, the street price is about 80K each. So not cheap car by any stretch of the imagination. But it was kind of nice. The project director, Benedict Locker, was there, and we talked for quite a bit of time. I think the thing he was proudest of is that it goes from 0 to 130 miles per hour, around 200 kilometers per hour, in 6.5 seconds, which is nutty. That's like twice as fast as like the Bolt or the Leaf we just talked about. And then if, you know, he said, look, you know, if we tuned these motors right and we had the right differentials and we had the right aerodynamics, they could go 300 miles per hour, which, you know, jeez, that's kind of like whoa. But I guess, you know, what do you expect with 1200 horsepower and electric? And Schaeffler also had kind of this like urban transport bike thing. They call it a bio hybrid. The bio is you and the electric motor. Some other things we saw there, Ford was really touting their new spin scooter stuff and this whole smart city. It's called CV2X, which is cellular vehicle to everything communication. So like the scooter would talk to the car, would talk to the bikes and all this other stuff. Still kind of pretty early and prototypey there. Honda showed off a wireless vehicle to home. So actually the car is putting out wireless, and you know, it's like one of those two-way wireless charging. So that was first time I've ever seen that. Looked pretty cool. we'll look for more from that. Honda also had some autonomous ATVs, which were cool. Mercedes had their EQC 400 out there. You know, not first time we've seen this by any stretch of the imagination, but it's kind of nice to crawl around inside.
I think it was the US debut.
Yeah, US debut. There's quite a bit of traffic around it. It looks really nice inside. It's a Mercedes, you know. It's a nice car.
Yeah, we've seen it in Paris.
Yeah. So that was kind of CES. I know we're already kind of at our hour period, but wanted to kind of get through all that.
Do you have time, or you?
Yeah.
We can go through the three other things that we can talk. Real quick, we're going to go through them. GM announced that they're going to focus their EV effort on Cadillac to start with. So they didn't say that Cadillac is going to be an EV-only brand, but what they said is it's going to be the lead electric vehicle brand for GM as a whole, and it's going to be the first brand where they release their next-gen electric vehicles. So they've been talking about releasing, you know, like a dozen or so EVs in the next 3 or 4 years, and the first one that's going to be based on the new EV platform that they develop, it's going to be on the Cadillac brand, and they're going to build up from there, which I think is the right thing to do. I've been talking for a while about established automaker having some issues selling vehicles at the dealership under the same brand because they're sort of competing with their own gas-powered cars, especially if they do the GM doesn't do that, but even then, it can still have an effect. When they sell, for example, the Hyundai Kona, they send the Kona Electric and with the regular Kona, gas-powered Kona, hybrid Kona. So people compare those, and they don't get a full view of the cost, because, of course, the electric version is always more expensive, but they don't always express the true cost of ownership properly, which is an issue. People just are often more concerned about the sticker price than anything else. So that's why I think, like, if you focus just on EV brand, and then, again, that's not what they're saying GM with the Cadillac, though it's the step in that direction. I mean, the Escalade is not being converted anytime soon, even though it should be. But I think they're going that direction. I think that's great. They could have eventually, like, at the dealership, the Cadillac section is just Cadillac salesmen that are well-trained in an all-electric vehicle and are more incentivized to sell them an electric vehicle instead of a gas-powered one. And in the actual statement that GM released about that, they did say that they want to focus on selling profitable EVs. And the key word there is, of course, profitable, because we know that the Bolt EV is not necessarily profitable, and which is why it's not a huge-scale vehicle program. So I think those new next-gen EVs, starting with the Cadillac, it's going to be a full-fledged program that GM's going to actually be able to make money on it. So it's going to be at scale. They're going to try to sell them, which, of course, when they try to sell an EV, normally they're able to.
Yeah. And also, Cadillac's got the Super Cruise as well, so it'll compete with Tesla on that front as well, on the autonomous stuff.
Yeah. Super Cruise have focused more on, like, their own service and everything, but GM could certainly learn from it. And you mean Super Cruise? I always confuse the Cruise effort with Super Cruise. But yeah, the Cruise should eventually leak into Super Cruise too and get better from there, which would be a big deal. Ford also had an announcement this week with electric vehicles, but it's only about the European market. They did the restructuring in Europe. They got to hand a few vehicles like they did last year in the U.S. They announced, like, they're basically killing off most, if not all, of their passenger sedan. Now, they were killing a few in Europe, but they also said that they want to focus on electric vehicles, and they want... and that's important here. It's phrased either a mild hybrid, full hybrid, plug-in hybrid, or full battery electric option. So it's something that a lot of other automakers have announced recently. Well, I mean, not a lot. I'll list them somewhere. Volvo did it. Jaguar did it. A few others did it. Infiniti did it. Where they announced that all new vehicles are going to have an electric motor, basically. But that electric motor could be powered by a hybrid powertrain, plug-in hybrid powertrain, or just a battery pack. So they didn't announce any mix of those, like what's going to be the percentage, they think. They didn't say that. So that's why I'm not that excited about this announcement. I'm certainly more excited about it than the restructuring they did in the U.S. where they said, oh, we can't sell those, so we don't even going electric. But I think that's
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, I thought that was kind of amusing. Like, they're having the same problem in Europe as they're having in the U.S., but the solution in the U.S. is just like, we're not making any cars. We're just going to make trucks now. Yeah. And in Europe, they're like, "Well, we're not going to. We can't sell any trucks in Europe, so we're going to make electrics."
Yeah, and I mean the reason behind that is the regulation, basically, is because they have to sell something that's electric. So, and they're not going to sell electric trucks apparently. So they're going to keep selling cars, just make them electric, because the EU regulation are asking for a 37% reduction in emissions from entire fleet. So just killing them off is not a solution for them. But even then, I'm still not like, well, it's not a victory for us if EV fans yet. We need to see what's the actual mix of electric vehicles and no cars, because I just don't get how you can even release a new hybrid on the market in 2020 or whatever. They're going to start doing that. Like, hybrids are not dead yet, but they are dying for sure. If you look at the sales pattern and everything, if you're releasing a new car, it should be all electric. It doesn't make anything else doesn't make much sense. Is that me on the phone here? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's you. The last thing is the Audi. They're going to release a smaller Model Y size kind of crossover. They announced it in the Netherlands, which is weird because it was during CES. And they had a booth there.
Apparently, they already released that image that's on. They released it at the launch of the e-tron. We just didn't pick it up. Like, no one saw that it was a different car.
Huh.
But at the Netherlands debut, they showed it. And then someone probably asked, like, that's a new car? They're like, yeah, it's going to be a smaller e-tron. That's going to be on Villa next not next month, but in March. Which is interesting because it's also when Tesla is going to supposedly release, not release, but unveil the Model Y. So that's going to be a direct competitor to Model Y. It's going to be the new, like, the compact SUV segment, which is a fastly growing one. And I think it's going to be a big deal for electric vehicles to have a few entries in that segment. And I mean, I think the Kona EV and the Niro EV are also in that segment, but they're not like premium vehicles. Which it's also a big segment. And yeah, we're going to just end real quick on Volkswagen launching, I think it's pronounced Eli, which is their new energy and charging division. So they are doing sort of a Tesla energy thing where they are, alongside their EV effort, they are launching a different company to provide electricity to electric vehicle owners and provide charging to electric vehicle owners. So they're talking about the physical hardware itself. So they want to sell home charging station and also do some public station. And they also want to cover the power supply side of thing, the energy supply side of thing, much like Tesla Energy does with solar energy, though they don't necessarily want to do it with solar energy on their side. They are still building contracts to only provide energy from hydropower plants. They have a division for that already, Volkswagen. They don't remember the name exactly for it, but there's a way for them to just contract a new home to only get power from hydroelectricity, specific hydro plants that are financed by Volkswagen. So that's what they want to do, and they want to combine that with charging and just own the entire loop of energy consumption and generation, much like Tesla's approach, which, of course, is a great idea. And more people doing it, faster adoption. Great news. And that's pretty much it for us this week, guys. Thanks a lot for listening. Like I said, I just got the Jaguar I-Pace for a few days here, so I'm going to do test that this weekend. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram for some pictures every weekend, but we're going to have a full review early next week as a post on Electrek and also a video content on the channel here on YouTube. And then I'm going to talk about it on the podcast, of course, next week. And plenty of good stuff coming up on our side, so stay tuned, and thanks a lot for listening, thanks a lot for subscribing, and we're going to see you same place, same time next week. Bye-bye.